Welcome to Podcast on Fire 134. We are continuing our Milky Way Treasures series, and we've reached the Odd One Dies. And it's more non-direct Jonito / Wycalfi material from the vaults, if you will. This one got a good local DVD release, and it's more available, was anyway, and more known. And it's the debut of the mythical Patrick Yao, whose other movies at Milky Way are also classics. Expect the Unexpected, The Longest Night. But one thing we will kind of cover and we'll kind of mull over is how much was Jonito actually involved in this production? How much did he get to sit in the director's chair for those ones? And judging by stories out there, for all of them. So, but it is Patrick Yao movie, you know, so... we'll never know 100%, but we know almost that it's Patrick Yao in credit only. But we'll go over that story a little bit. I think we got to give credit to the actual credit, if you will. You know, it's a Patrick Yao movie. We'll call it a Patrick Yao movie, produced by Jonito and written by Wycalfi. So my name is Kenny B, and with me is Tom KW. So say hi. Welcome back from London.
Yes. Hello.
Why do you go outside? Why do you need to go outside? It's much more comfy inside. You can watch London on a postcard. Postcards.
Yeah, watch. I did need some fresh air, Ken, to get out. But yeah, I'm fresh from London. Fresh from trying my first pork bun as well. Been hearing a lot about it in these, you know, fangdazzled movies. And yes.
Best thinking. So we'll let you speak of your adventures in a little bit and see how. Hopefully it gets sleazy. I'm hoping.
You'll see.
Decadence. All right. This is Podcast on Fire at the Podcast on Fire Network. Website for all of the shows, including this one, the Anchor Show, the flagship, if you will, podcastonfire.com. Email for feedback, podcastonfire@googlemail.com. The old archive, the forum archive, if you will, podcastonfire.com/forum. No one uses message forums anymore, really. Ours got invaded by spam, so we closed it, but it is open for those who registered before, like Tom. So Tom has access to the members-only archive, where we have our cut conversations and extra content. That we have whenever we post extra content, it is in the bonus episodes section of the website. Those are exclusive extra podcasts to the website, so you can't find them on iTunes, you can't find them on Stitcher, only on podcastonfire.com. And me and Tom have done a few together, and with Dave, like the Chris Safari one. We did a Magic Cop extra podcast for the vampire season. Well, both of those were for vampire season, so
yep.
So it's good extra fun. I do enjoy them existing at all, you know, as a concept. I like the idea of bonus podcasts. So so good on you for having the patience to participate even in the bonus episode section. So I make him sit there with me. You sit there and I like it. Schnell!
This is true. This is very true.
Very true. And he can attest to that and witness to that when he writes about those painful evenings in the Podcast on Fire Facebook discussion group. A full confessional is coming from Tom KW, of course. It's in the works.
I've got the whip scars on my bum.
Very coy. Alrighty, the Podcast on Fire Network discussion group is open to all kinds of behavior and moods, if you will, because the Podcast on Fire Network has all kind of manner of shows, and we've got sleazy and classy shows, so the remarks and messages will all be sleazy and classy, I guess, and everything in between. So if you want to join the discussion group, you can type in Podcast on Fire Network in the Facebook search bar, request to be added, and you'll be added pretty much instantly, and like our page, of course, facebook.com/POF Network, where you'll also find the link to the group on that page in the info box. And follow us on Twitter, twitter.com/podcastonfire. I do my writing at sogoodreviews.com and do video reviews at sleazykvideo.com. Taiwanese movies, category 3 movies, IFD, film art, cool horror movies. As I've said before, I'm going to be more selective with my category 3 and sleaze stuff and focus more on Taiwanese movies. But that said, there will still be plenty of reviews of category 3 movies. I won't pick them as randomly anymore. I will pick more in a focused manner, trying to get more of the true life crime movies done, like, that I haven't done, for instance. But do like the random ones maybe as quick takes. But who knows, when you do a random one, you'll find a gem. So then I'll upgrade it to a main review. So it works that way too. And follow me on Twitter as well, my nonsense over at Twitter, twitter.com/sogoodreviews. iTunes, you can subscribe to the Podcast on Fire Network there. And if you like the show, we would very much appreciate a rating and a little comment. That doesn't take long, and if you like the show, that would help us to get a little bit more exposure. But you can also stream us on Stitcher if you don't like downloading podcasts to your preferred device. You can stream the entire Podcast on Fire Network on Stitcher. Go to stitcher.com for the application available to your computer, but it's also available for the most common app, for the most common tablets and smartphones out there. Free application. Once you're in Stitcher, write in Podcast on Fire, type in Podcast on Fire Network, and you can add each show individually. And Tom KW does reviews over at vcinemashow.com, one of the many writers in that fantastic stable of writers over there. So what was it you posted last? Was it Little Big Soldier, or have you done anything
Little
since
Big Soldier.
Then? Yeah.
No, Little Big Soldier. I've got a couple in the pipeline.
Right. I mean, it's almost midsummer now, so I'm not insinuating, like, have you done anything more? Well, you should! You know, it's in the middle of summer, so, you know, yeah, exactly. Even if Coffin John is in over in Tokyo and Thailand, you know, you're right.
Yeah, there's a couple of things coming up, so just keep on the lookout for them.
I am, because I do enjoy your reviews. You're a good writer, man, and on point. Your points get across. You know, you're not, in short, you're a good writer. I enjoy your reviews, man, and whether they're verbal or written, so good on you. Well, whenever.
Thank you, Ken. I do try to keep it simple. I probably look like a retard next to some of the great people that are on there. John Bearer and, you know, people like that. But yeah,
stop
just
it,
keep
stop
it simple.
Stop it! Don't call yourself a retarded writer. If anything, I am. You know, I write about hardcore porn movies and talk about
the retard.
Yeah, you know. When we get to our Mindfuck Ghoul Sex Squad podcast, you know, listen back and think about who's the actual retard. That's another matter.
Yeah.
I was actually probably the last person on that note of politically incorrect humor. I was probably the last person to see Tropic Thunder, and I've forgotten about that classical joke where they talk about how you get awards. Playing mentally challenged people, you know. If you go full retard, you don't win awards. If you go half retard, you do. And I love that movie. Robert Downey Jr. is such a genius in that movie.
The man.
So confused. So it's good fun. Okay, some network updates. We've been a little bit absent. You've heard a backup show, for instance, the last time, Podcast on Fire. What's up? But that's not a downgrade or anything bad. But there's plenty of activity there. Pardon me?
Cobwebs on the old headset.
That's almost like, I don't know. You can make that trendy and hip, you know, cobweb headsets, you know, 99 quid.
Yeah, fucking hardcore.
Just market that shit and we can make money. Podcast on Fire Network can finally make money.
Success.
So think about that, form that idea while I talk about the network updates. Plenty of activity. We put up, for instance, this weekend's list 10 on Rape by Nigel 2 and 3. And we did those two movies despite neither of them being Category 3 movies, because we want to cover the entire series. But the discussion about how much you can push within Category 2B was intriguing to me. And those movies do. So it was a good little episode, if I may say so myself. We did fairly well, me and the great Lord Joshua Regal. That's his voice, you know. I can't approximate it. I can do Batman, but I can't do the great Lord Joshua Regal's pirate voice. My parents are dead! And what we have in the pipeline, me and the great Lord Joshua Regal, is, for instance, next up is the, in about 2 weeks' time, I think, is the special, the hardcore porn special on Ghoul Sex Squad and Mindfuck.
Yes.
And I am proud of that episode. We discussed and reviewed those movies, but obviously being goofy movies and graphic movies and hardcore movies, you need to be graphic with your conversation as well. So, you know, we do utilize the opportunity to discuss and review the movies, but we also do utilize the opportunity to be childish a little bit here and there. So.
Oh, you gotta line it up a bit.
Exactly. So we gave those movies way more exposure than they've ever had. So. But we did it recently, like last week, recorded another show, another title, Whitey Theater, on Girls from China and China Dolls. And those two are of the you know, story template where mainland immigrants come to Hong Kong and bad shit happened to them, essentially. Well, in the case of one, one actually gets a career, you know, she climbs the career ladder. So it's almost that template. But that's Girls from China, and what I wanted to say about that is that has a rather catchy theme song. And both of us, me and the great Lord Joshua Regal, sing excerpts out of on the show because it has English in the chorus. I believe so. What is it? I was born in Beijing.
Oh my God! Amazing. Yeah. Yeah. Amazing.
It's a great canto tune. It's a great canto tune, man.
It's like silk. It's just silk. Canto. Yeah. Silk. Sing for me, motherfucker. Sing.
Is the coke in your system now? It sounds like it. Now I'm Hitler.
Little sprinkle.
Yeah. Since me and great Lord Joshua Regal are recording so much because we can, our schedule kind of align. We are planning to release some episodes earlier than scheduled. So say we usually release any other show that isn't Podcast on Fire bi-weekly, but we'll probably get some of those out because the pipeline is pretty big. So so if you can't keep up, then you'll get then you'll get a pretty steady barrage of sleaze this week in sleaze. And so that's that. A while back, because Tom is here now, you remember we released the latest director series on Peacock King and Saga of the Phoenix. So hope you enjoyed when you listened to that, listeners, or whenever you listen to it, because this is obviously no news, but the magic is with podcasts that have timeless subjects is that you can catch up on them whenever you like. You know, they're there for you whenever you'd like to immerse yourself into the world of Nam Night Choi. So I always think that's the magic. You shouldn't really, in all seriousness, expect a lot of feedback instantly for some of our special shows, because they get published and then people take them in over time.
We have so much output as well. I don't think there's anybody who could probably keep, so there's stuff there. There's always kind of a constant output. So it's hard to keep track of.
That's my belief, though, to utilize the opportunity that we have, you know, because the window to provide Asian cinema podcasts that cover that we do might not be there at another time. So I believe in producing and getting it out there. And so whenever you catch up, you can let us know what you think of the director series. And that series on this director, Nam Night Choi, when it's done, we've covered all movies but one. But the reason it was probably extensive, rather, was because Nam's movies deserve that look, but it was a trial run for this series. So next director, I'll probably be more selective about, because that director's filmography is even more extensive. I have picked the next director.
Ma. Yeah, Jingle Ma.
Fuck
yeah.
Off!
Jingle, what? Jingle Ma.
And Benny Chan.
Double
deuce. Double deuce. Uh-huh. So you'll have to, I don't know, coke me the fuck up or down to get me on those shows.
Recurring theme. Yeah.
So Ken, how about Benny Chan? Benny Chan is beautiful. Benny Chan is flowers. Well,
let's put the coke down.
Yeah.
Let's get on with it, Ken.
Yeah. But I have picked. But I can say this much: this director directed a lot of old school martial arts movies, but a lot of standout classics. But it was a very productive director, so it means we'll probably maybe cover a third of the filmography, if that, a fourth maybe. So we'll see. We're not done yet. But anyway, next week, Watch Korean Cinema records and will return quite quickly after I'm done editing, as me and Rufus Duram from Sin Awesome and Paul Quinn have finally managed to align schedules again to cover Korean kaiju in the form of Yongari and the Kim Jong-il produced Pulgasari. And there will be plenty of notes on and discussion on the directors of those respective movies and the kidnapping case of the director who was forced to do Pulgasari and other movies for the late, or rather dead, dictator. Late was always like respectfully said, you know, he's dead. And good riddance. So that'll be fun. I want to get that out fairly quickly because we haven't had a Watch Korean Cinema in a long time due to, again, schedules. Scheduling, I'll tell you, Tom, and you'll know this, scheduling is pretty much the hardest part of making podcasts.
Yeah.
Actually, no, research is faster than scheduling. A lot,
yeah.
Even.
Oh, yeah.
So tonight also, because you're hearing this on a Saturday, we're recording on a Friday, I will guest later on tonight on the very latest Two-Fisted podcast. It will probably go through a name change, though, but more details as I have them. So it will be, it will still be, you know, the show that Sylvia is the co-host of. She did so marvelously well with the Hong Kong Godfather podcast. So I can't wait to be on. It's an honor. And I can't wait to hear the second show, which is already recorded. But more details as Sylvia feels comfortable releasing such details. And finally, next week, the next scheduled special show is Taiwan Noir 3 with me and John Charles on Wolf Devil Woman and the Lady Avenger. And this will be a special on the ladies directing genre Taiwanese cinema. Because Wolf Devil Woman is wild wuxia fantasy and... The Lady Avengers, a rape revenge movie. And also me and John Charles have already recorded a new episode, Taiwan Noir 4, that you will get soon. That is a special on Girl with a Gun, which is the remake slash ripoff of Abel Ferrara's Miss 45, his rape revenge movie. And the movie in the second half is Breakout from Oppression, which is from the director of Lady Avenger that we are covering in Taiwan Noir 3. And the latter one stars Lu Xiaofen, my wife. By the way, if you do a search on Google Images, if you type in Lux Yu Fan, there will be a picture of there will be a picture of me as well.
Let's do it now. Can't see yet. Oh, there he is!
Yeah, first fucking page, motherfucker.
What? Are we in third row, motherfucker?
We are immersed. We're as one, me and my wife. Finally,
that's amazing. You're right next to each other.
Yes. And you know, I often type in her name in Google Images, obviously. So it was daily. I mean,
even though you want to see her at any point, you still go on Google just because you love her that much, Ken.
I gotta know what she's up to. Does that make sense? No.
No, it doesn't.
What are you doing? You were on Google Images, yeah? Well, see you later. Bye. Click. And finally, not so much a network update, but a plug for a blogger here in Never Dies, who actually named our Taiwan show. He's the one who came up with Taiwan Noir. He's been gathering top 10 lists, top 10 Hong Kong movie lists from a variety of bloggers and profiles in the online community. A great project. And he's published my list finally as well. So you'll see a link in the show post to all the top 10 lists, not just mine. And I expect when you people are reading my list, there will be a lot of reactions akin to, huh? What now?
What?
Huh?
That one?
Yeah, exactly. That one. That was shit. But, you know, a smashing job. You know, full credit to Here Never Dies for gathering material for this project. So, and also for encouraging me to actually do a list. I wasn't keen on doing a list. I liked the project, but I wasn't keen on doing a list because I... In all honesty, Tom, I like doing this list. I'm glad that did it, but I don't like the notion of top 10 lists because not that I'm indecisive, but I just don't feel that it's a point. But again, I've loved seeing every single list out of this project. So it's kind of a dislike and love at the same time in a weird way. So I don't know how you are with these type of lists.
No, I agree. I'm yet... to contribute. I haven't read everyone else's list. I've got a list I can name a 10, but it's difficult to kind of talk about what they mean to you or you know, to talk about them without kind of repeating what everyone else has said about them. So it's a bit of a tricky one.
Okay, last movies watched, and you had a bit of an adventure. As I said, you went outside, and why in the world you needed to, I don't know, but good on you, I guess. But what were you up to? A little bit of vacation to London town?
It was, yeah, it was a nice little trip to my first time in London, and we planned it, but we'd also seen on that specific weekend Andy Lau, we could see his face 10 times bigger than we normally see it, okay? And that was delicious, Ken. And that, and the film we're talking about is Anheuser Simple Life.
Sweet, right on.
Which is which I think in Hong Kong, I think it's already out on Blu-ray and DVD in Hong Kong, but it came out this year. It's been doing kind of sparse kind of cinemas in the UK, nowhere local for us. But we thought we'd travel to London. We had some of the stuff we wanted to do, so we thought we'd kind of kill. Yeah, it was great. I went to London's Chinatown, which was great. I basically was kind of searching around. Yeah, I did stumble upon a Tokyo Raiders VCD.
Oh, fuck off.
That had your name on, Ken. Fuck off. I thought, I mean, what a perfect gift for
Ken Smash.
Okay. But yeah, I stumbled upon bits and pieces. Stumbled upon a shop which had loads of DVDs and. It was mainly stuff that was they had pretty much every Stephen Chow film, you know, ever on DVD. It was crazy looking through them, but they did want, you know, a fair bit of money for something, which I thought was, you know, stuff that, I mean, Megastar DVDs, which they're wanting for £15 a pop for a Megastar DVD, which seemed kind of, you know, unreal. But they did have a few bits, but they had a lot of Dragon Dynasty stuff as well. I don't know whether. You know, whether that was worth it as well, but they did. There was a lot, and it was nice to kind of see that there was people selling this stuff, and kind of there was interest in there, because there's quite a few people in there looking through the list and the shelves and kind of, you know, scanning through. And I found a few VCDs. I didn't pick up anything. Nothing really kind of shot at me, but it was nice. Managed nice vibes there. But yeah, we sort of saw the film at Covent Garden.
Can I just ask you, was this part of a cinema run or like a festival thing, Simple Life? Or was it a local cinema thing?
It was a cinema run at the Odeon in Covent Garden, which, as I said, it's only been doing kind of sparse showings around the UK, bits and pieces here and there. I think it's been doing a lot well around the circuits, and it's won quite a few bits and pieces. One Best Director, I think, at the Golden Horse Awards.
Yeah, Diane Yip, actors, Diane Yip has won like 5,000 awards for that movie.
Yeah, most recommended film of the year, best actor, but just dozens and dozens of awards. So, yeah, and I mean, I don't want to comment too much on the film, because I think I am going to write a review for it. I feel it's a film that does deserve film. Does it deserve all the praise? I think so. It's probably surprisingly a lot more cold and a lot more sparse than a lot of people would.
Anhui is good at that, actually, to keep it real, and then you extract affecting stuff if you like. If you're interested, then go back to her award-winning drama from a few years ago called The Way We Are, which is a shot-on-video, almost documentary style, just a portrait of a few people living in a particular area in Hong Kong. It's very down-to-earth, low-key, but excellent. So
that's the way she works the best. Is, and this is kind of another kind of example of that, is just the kind of the simple, very simple story, but you get a lot from the characters that are there. And I think it is a very, you know, cold and kind of sparse film, but, you know, the warmth comes from the characters and the relationship, and, you know, how that's built upon. And it, I mean, it's 2 hours long. It does clock in, yeah, I think just under 2 hours, but I feel it's deserved, and I feel it definitely, it's not, you know, obviously a big kind of crowd pleaser or a, you know, in film, but it's definitely a film that kind of draws you in and really kind of, yeah, just draws you in and really makes you kind of feel a part of these characters, and you know, and Andy Lau just gets better and better with every film. I see him as an actor; he's really coming to his kind of own. I mean, I think he's 50s now, or I mean, he's late 40s, going into 50s, and I think he's really from the roles, I think I'm sure we spoke about this before, but the roles he used to do compared to the roles he's been doing over the last 5-10 years, just he's grown so much as an actor, and he's definitely one of my favourite actors, and a lot of other people's favourite.
Yeah, and rightly so. So it's a nice progression to have experience, because some of us have been growing up with Andy Lau from kind of the 90s and onwards. So yeah. Not necessarily from the 80s. We've seen the 80s stuff, but so it's still kind of, we've grown up with Andy Lau in a way. So seeing him progress is wonderful, actually. So I had a few weeks off recently, and when I'm on vacation, I watch movies.
Spring break!
It was movie break, Robbie. No, it's a break to watch movies. You know, so I caught up with various movies, some three-hour Japanese war epics, rewatching some Fulci, some Lenzi, some hentai that I thought I hated. Yes, I was Urutsuki Doji, Legend of the Overfiend. Yeah. And Legend of the Overfiend, the first OVA, it's actually quite good. Definitely adults only, obviously. It is a hardcore porn monster action gore.
And is this the uncut OVA you sort of can? Yeah.
Yes.
Yep.
Uncut, unpixelated one as well.
Oh, okay, no pixels.
It's it's a US set, this, so they don't need to have the pixels a la like it was in Japan, to be honest. But Legend of the
Overfiend. Okay, so it's actually uncut compared to its Japanese release.
Yes, actually.
Oh, yeah. Okay, cool.
Having said that, the inserts, you know, the penetration inserts, they're still oddly darkly. You can barely see anything anyway. You know what I mean? It's very dark. They lit them very dark. But regardless, it's not the most compelling thing of Legend of the Overfiend. It is actually the imagination in the horror aspects of it, and the monster action aspects of it, and the gore aspects of it. And it's a kind of, you know, an Armageddon type of story, end of the world type of story, that was actually quite compelling. I actually did like it. It's said that the OVAs after this, actually, they're not as good. So the longer the OVA series runs, the quality kind of is lessened after a while. So I thought I hated it, but I saw it cut way back in the day on UK VHS,
yeah,
which was the feature edit of the 4 OVAs. So it's like the 4 OVAs is maybe like 3 hours long, and the movie was 100 minutes long. So it was missing quite a bit. So I remember my friend said exactly what I felt after watching it uncut. He felt it was a really like epic end of the world type of story based on that edit. I couldn't understand that verdict, but I can understand it now that I've seen it in full, and not just uncut. I'm talking in full, the entire story, because there is, you know, pretty solid storytelling here as well, but obviously for adults only. It has actual animated penetration, either by demons with tentacles or between humans. You know, it has actual sex scenes, but most of the time it's greatly imaginative and horrific monster action. You know, monsters mutating out of people. You know, bursting through people and all of that. And that's cool.
Well, that's the one thing that's always stayed with me, the fact that, you know, a bit, you know, tit lane, and it was a bit naughty, but from, you know, from that, the visuals do stay. The visuals have always stayed with me, and from that cut, again, some of the kind of horrific imagery from it. Have you seen the second one? Get the Demon Womb.
No, I do have it on the same set, but I haven't seen it yet.
Cool. I would be interested to see them, because I think people probably do judge it in a bad view because, or with a bad light, seeing that it is just kind of, you know, porn, but it does balance a very kind of apocalyptic, you know, horrific kind of story going on with it, with some great visuals. I do agree, and I do think it's well animated in spots as well.
Yes,
that's one area where it is overlooked. I think it is well animated, especially with some of the action scenes, some of the violent scenes. It is well animated.
Hmm. Yes, I was surprised. So I do recommend watching it uncut in full, you know, even if you can't see it, even if you only can find it with pixels, pixelated rather, see it in full, you know, the entire 3-hour OVA. It's like 4 parts and 3 hours in total, I believe. So that's what I watched. But mainly I wanted to mention a movie that I reviewed just recently called Confession of a Concubine, aka I Want More. this is a period. Yeah, it's actually originally called I Want More. The English dub title is Confession of a Concubine, I believe. But what it is, it's a period erotica co-directed by the director of Snake in Arts of Shaolin. So it has a Jackie Chan connection in a way. It's wall-to-wall sex as girls are trained to be perfect concubines. So you have dynasty sex toys, sex, torture, sex.
Is there sex in it, Ken?
It has sex in it. And on the English dub, I actually got to see it dubbed because the Hong Kong DVD isn't subtitled. On the English dub, they removed most of the traditional Chinese score and set it to more of a 70s, you know, bum chicka bow score. Yes, with the constant... there's like 2-3 songs, and one of the songs that they repeats a lot, including on the... It's like its theme. It's a song where... The only lyric really is "Love me, baby, make love to me" in English.
Nice, nice.
So it's a little bow chicka bow in a period movie, and that certainly made it snappy and hilarious. Actually,
working that wah wah pedal.
Yes, it wouldn't feel out of place in a Shaft movie, if you will, but it's not the Shaft theme though. It stars as Xu Yam Yam, aka Sushin Shaw. And actual fact, I didn't realize this until recently, the characters of director Pang Ho Chung's Vulgaria in the movie, they are remaking this film, Confession of a Concubine, which shows that director Pang knows his history and his obscure shit. Because it's not a known movie as such. It's not like it's a Sex and Zen or an Intimate Confessions of a Chinese Courtesan classic. It's a pretty buried movie. But Pang Ho Chung still knew of it. And that makes him, you know, a fantastic movie fan. And Vulgaria, his Category 3 comedies, it's getting acclaim. And it even has Sushin Shaw, Xu Yam Yam, in it as well, playing herself, I believe, because they want to recast her in the remake. So that was that, and after a break we'll get into the main feature discussion here of The Odd One Dies from 1997, the latest Milky Way treasure, or is it, that we are going to cover here. So be right back.
Shiny.
Shiny. You got me off my game now.
Sorry, man, just off.
Hitler says, shut up! Break time, schnell! So, see you after the break, everybody. So welcome back, and we've reached the review of The Odd One Dies, the latest in our Milky Way Treasure series, started with Beyond Hypothermia, continued with Intruder, and now we've reached The Odd One Dies from 1997. Still early in the Milky Way life, and it's still the most exciting time for me anyway. But 90s really is the most exciting time for me, as we've explained in the other shows, so have a listen back. The plot for The Odd One Dies... taken from my review of the film, by the way. Triad Mo, played by Takeshi Kaneshiro, unexpectedly wins a fortune at gambling tables, and instead of fulfilling the task of murdering a Thailand triad boss, he hires a mainland woman, played by Carmen Lee, to perform the task for him. She's a woman with a torn past and scores to settle with profiles in the triad world, and as the date draws closer to the assassination, so does Mo and the employed murderer. Very conventional plot, not the most conventional movie. We can say that quite early on. But okay, let's dive into the Patrick Yao Johnny To controversy, or whatever you want to call it. I'm not going to bring much controversy to the table. I'm just going to bring pretty much the facts, and that I'm cool with it. I'm zen, you know. I'm very zen. You know, I'm cool. That's cool. We still got classic movies. We still got Longest Night and Unexpected. They could have credited them to, I don't know, Michael Wong. It wouldn't have mattered. They were great movies. But anyway, Patrick Yao, who's the credited director here, he was a former production assistant at the news department at TVB, then started to work as a production assistant and assistant director in the drama department subsequently, where he presumably got to work for Johnny Toe and met Johnny Toe. He got brought on board to Milky Way for his shot at primary director, which resulted in his debut, The Odd One Dies. Subsequently, Expect the Unexpected and The Longest Night followed, directed by Patrick Yao. And he's credited for all three films, but there's been reports about difference in opinions when working on these movies, and Johnny Toe not being confident Patrick had what it takes to fulfill the vision, leading to Toe taking over main direction on all three films. And Stephen Teo's book, Director in Action, Johnny Toe and the Hong Kong Action Film, has passages on this issue. And Wikipedia says the following about this. Quote, when asked why he still let Yao be credited as director, he responded, Johnny Toe that is, quote, I had wanted him to succeed and be recognized as a director. Both he and Patrick Leung were my former assistant directors, and perhaps they both felt that I was supervising them. Therefore, if they left the company, it might be better for them. Which, you know, end quote. Sounds harsh, but to me anyway, Johnny Toe has always come off as uncompromising for the sake of better cinema, better honed vision, you know what I mean? And that's why we don't anymore really see as many new directors at Milky Way on a constant basis. They seem to abandon the concept for a while and just direct themselves, even though we've had directors like, in the past, Derek Chu, and nowadays Soi Chang and Lo Wing Chung directing movies for them. But I'm cool with it. I mean, this happens in movies, and it was a nice sign of respect, I guess, to let Patrick Yao get the credit on all three movies. So as much of a maybe madman and, you know, uncompromising Hitler Johnny Toe is at Milky Way, you know, it's still, we still got these three movies, you know. So I'm very cool with it. So go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, I've always found it a bit strange that if it was Toe directing, then why wasn't it just the one film where, you know, Patrick was credited, but he's credited for four films?
Three films.
Yeah. Which I've never understood. Like three films over, you know, 2 years. Why, if Toe took over all three projects, then why initially credit Patrick and then he'd take over as a director? It's always seemed strange to me.
Maybe to give him like a nice push out of Milky Way and into something else with credits to his name. I don't know. To help his resume. The thing is, Patrick Yao isn't really working anymore in feature film. He did one movie, The Losers Club, in 2001, with Francis, which I haven't seen. It's a comedy, satire on TV, I believe. I haven't seen it, though. I don't think it's very acclaimed. So that might be the actual only one he directed. Because I think it's for China Star or something like that, but not for Milky Way. But you know what? It's fine. I mean, think of your will about Johnny Toe. I think the proof is in what happened. You know, Patrick Yao got credit on three movies, even though he might not have deserved, I don't know, overall across the three movies, maybe more than 10-20% of the credit. You know what I mean? He still got the three credits. And the three of the movies, in my opinion, are all classics, including this one for me personally. So, I don't know. Treat it as a controversy, if you will. I'm cool with it.
Well, I don't know whether we said it on air last time, but a thought would be possibly that Toe could only direct a certain amount of films each year, so he possibly put Patrick's name on there so he could still direct without being credited for it, so without, you know, breaking certain rules he might be under.
It's a good theory. I don't know anything about it, really, so any theory is good at this point. You know?
But yeah, as I say, it's just a theory, but yeah, it's hard to kind of get your head around it. They're clearly... They have Toe's style, and clearly kind of, you know, the way he directs is very similar. Mm-hmm. So it does feel at times like, you know, he's either taken over or, it, you know, maybe him just solely directing. But Yeah, I mean, I think it's going to be one of those things that I think is never going to be resolved.
Hmm.
So it doesn't...
I think we know enough now, rather than... because it is... someone has expressed... Johnny Toro himself has, you know, expressed himself about the subject. So we have something now and there.
Yeah, I think that's all probably we're going to get on it. And, with, you know, a concrete answer we may not get. But mm-hmm. I think, you know, Toro's opinion and what Toro said will probably be all we get. I don't see, you know, Patrick coming out of the, you know, shadows to kind of speak upon it. Go against his former kind of, you know, the assistant director. I don't think it's going to happen. So I think his word will probably be bond on this situation.
Yeah. Why dwell on the past, really? So just move forward. And we'll be moving forward a little bit on the actors. Small notes on them. Takeshi Kanehiro, of Japanese and Taiwanese heritage. His mother is Taiwanese and his father is from Okinawa in Japan. Hence being able to work in Japanese and Hong Kong movies and Taiwanese movies. I think he speaks pretty much fluently or Cantonese Mandarin and Japanese. So what a playing field Takeshi has. You know, incredibly good looking. I mean, he's been a model for fuck's sake, you know, and a good actor to boot, you know, a developing actor. So he's got a playing field in Asia. I think he speaks decent English as well, so there might be opportunity.
You didn't go get a room, mate.
Hi, Takeshi. But he started out as a singer, and debuted in movies for Johnny Toro in the Heroic Trio sequel Executioners way back in the 90s, 93 and 94. And got to appear in multiple acclaimed movies in the 90s, including Shunking Express, For Wong Kar-wai, Fallen Angels, for the same director.
Never heard of him.
No. Strange, some indie deadbeat director that no one likes.
Yes.
Lee Chin-ai's Terminal Illness drama, Lost and Found, is probably one of his best roles, with Kelly Chen and Michael Wong. Yeah, I really recommend anyone to go out and get that. He's such an uplifting character in Lost and Found. I really recommend it. The Odd One Dies for Milky Ways, as we're looking at tonight, and the partly fantasy romance Anna Magdalena was also a movie he was in. He co-starred with Aaron Kwok and Kelly Chen in that one. He has also branched out in Japanese TV and on the big screen in Japan for the Japanese sci-fi movie Returner in 2002. So, you know, some small movies, some big movies back then, but lots of big movies lately during the last 10-12 years, if you will, including House of Flying Daggers for Zhang Yimou with Andy Lau, The Warlords and Red Cliff 1 and 2, and has also been a spokesperson and a model for Armani, Prada, Honda, Sony Ericsson, Asia Airways, etc. And is also a devoted Tibetan Buddhist, having converted in 1997, and is really known, despite us knowing a lot about him, he is known for making an effort to avoid the media spotlight. So he's not a tabloid darling as such, because no one really can, you know, spot him. And good on him to avoid the media spotlight and just focus on work and endeavors, you know. So good on him. I like Takeshi. He's a likable actor in quite a number of roles. I haven't seen too much of those costume movies that I mentioned. I've seen House of Flying Daggers. Not that I would like, whoa, I found a new acting legend. You know, House of Flying Daggers is fine, but it's not an acting movie per se, you know.
Oh, no.
But, you know, I do like him. I think he's a very likable actor. What do you think about him?
Yeah, I mean, two roles I probably, you know, most recognize it from. Obviously, Don't Give a Damn, where he's in an infamous scene where, you know, he's blacked up.
Yeah, him and Yuen Biu with blackface.
Controversial. But, you know, no, this was Hong Kong in the mid-90s.
Yeah.
It's bound to happen. So, yeah. Not really particularly controversial. And I think I mentioned before, the underrated Hero from 1997. Which I think is a remake of a Shaw Brothers film.
Yeah, it's a remake of Boxer from Shantung.
And with Yuen Biu. From that, I remember really kind of solid. He takes a lead in that film as well. And I think that was the first film I saw where I kind of thought, yeah, you know, he's definitely got presence. He's not only kind of, you know, a handsome lad. He's also kind of got really good presence. And obviously, you know, Chungking Express, which, whatever you say about the film, he definitely... Okay, a bit of poopy there. whatever you say about the film, you can't deny the fact that, you know, he's iconic in it, and that, you know, that film alone is a lot of iconic imagery, which he's involved in.
Yeah, whatever. Garfield is in it, so you're right. Garfield is in it, man. Garfield is in it, you're right.
He's got a little baby toy plane, and he's stroking it on a lady's back. All right? How is that not iconic? Come on.
I like the scene where he's playing with his Garfield doll. I like that better.
That's good. Okay. Well, yeah, you can have that. You have your Garfield doll. I'll have toy plane on the back of a naked lady. All right?
Okay.
Right?
Want to fight or...
Take my opinion and don't say any more. but yeah, that's just, you know, and surprisingly, if you look at his Hong Kong filmography, he hasn't done, you know, that many films. If you look at a lot of other actors, they say he did films in other countries, but if you have a look of, you know, other actors from around that time, you know, more than five films a year. But no, he's kind of like picked his projects, and obviously he's got more kind of mainstream appeal the last 10 years or so. But yeah, he seems to be a guy that, as I say, you know, he avoids the media spotlight, kind of tends to pick his role kind of clearer and a bit more, you know, with a strong head rather than kind of just leap into stuff, which to his detriment, maybe that's, you know, commendable, but either way, his output is definitely lesser than a lot of other, you know, actors working in Hong Kong in the 90s.
I think he can have a career for another 15 or 20 years because he's obviously handsome and will not grow old very quick, you know. He will grow into his looks even more. And so I hope he, you know, continues to pick the way he does and try and develop, you know. And even if he doesn't want to, then, you know, the proof is in the resume so far, you know. So good on him. I mean, the little we know of him, you know, respect. You know, I do like anyone who comes off as having integrity, you know.
Yeah.
Not that he's the sole person in Hong Kong cinema to have integrity, obviously, you know, he seems like a good lad, you know.
Good lad, yeah.
Yeah. And tomorrow we'll read in the tabloids that he beat up his wife for 15 years or something like that. Oops. Yeah. Right, delete podcast. Anyway, a little bit on his female lead, Carmen Lee. Not a very frequent actress. I've not seen too much of her work, but she was once an air stewardess, appeared in notable Hong Kong movies such as The Wicked City, the live-action remake produced by Choi Hawk of the anime. She was in the Johnny Toe-directed Loving You alongside Lau Ching-wan, and in the Sing Sound Stephen Chow comedy Forbidden City Cop as well, one of Stephen Chow's very best movies and funniest movies as well. And even, she appears in Knock Off. She's, I think she's dubbed, unfortunately, but she's in Knock Off. She plays like a female police officer.
She's Knock Off, man. Yeah, she does.
Fantastic Knock Off. I love Knock Off. On record now. You know, I hate Chungking Express. I love Knock Off. Think of me, watch you.
we have spoken of Knock Off before, and yeah, it's a colourful film. Yeah. Let's just say that.
Fun. She also made a splash on TV, in particular for her role in the 1995 TV series adaptation of the Louis Cha Wuxia novel The Return of the Condor Heroes, probably one of many incarnations of that story on TV and movies and what have you, and seems to have left the scene now with a TV credit from 2001 being the last I could find, so hopefully living a good life, married and what have you, possibly.
Guessing so, yeah.
Yep. So not really an actress I had, like, you know, when I think of her, memories come flooding to me. It's
memorable. No, I mean, not kind of any, you know, anything bad to say against her, but not particularly very memorable. Looking through her filmography, I have seen films which she's been in, but cannot really remember her in the film.
Exactly, but they are good movies. You know, she has a five, six,
movies,
seven movies.
Yeah, she's in good movies. She's in too many ways to be number one as well. Which, no idea. There's no credit here for what part she played, but she's apparently in that as well.
Yeah, we'll see when we get to Too Many Ways to Be Number One. Maybe we can finally get some firm memories of Carmen Lee by doing podcasts on her the movie she was in, you know. Maybe that would finally make her like make her memorable, truly memorable for us, since we are getting a chance to speak of her movies quite a bit. So, but and including this one, so we've reached the review of The Odd One Dies, and I'll let you lead with your short opinion of the film first, Tom KW, and don't spoil the mood, please.
Okay. Well, what happens in the last 10 minutes is it's a strange, I'd say, black comedy.
Yes.
With very lowbrow situations, very weirdly kind of muted performances all round for the most part. It lost me at points, but almost was so different I couldn't help wanting to see it play out and where we actually got to near the end.
It's very difficult to describe. I'm sensing you like I'm trying to. It's not easy to say. Like, I like this comedy. I like this action movie. You know, it's not easily definable.
It's not. It's a genre film. Definitely. It's the romantic film. It's kind of that. You know, that assassins that kind of bound together film, which Hong Kong does so well. Which I think is a genre that is very much Hong Kong. You know, you get these assassins that are kind of brought together, or there's, you know, a romance happening when an assassination is about to happen.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's a genre that Hong Kong does well and has done many times before. But yeah, it's a weird film.
But like or dislike, I'm trying to get that out of you. You know, it's hard, I know, but yeah, like or dislike.
You dive into it thinking that it's one thing and it's something else, but I think that there was never a point where I was bored with it, even if my opinion was that I'm not enjoying it. Somehow it still kept me kind of locked into the film and wanted to see what happened. Because you're thinking, my whole kind of frame of mind thinking through was, you know, one scene I'd be like, you know, what the hell's going on here? Like, I don't understand what's going on. Second scene, I'd be laughing. Third scene, I'd kind of be like, oh, what's happening now? Fourth scene, again, I'd be kind of laughing because there'd be some, you know, strange, you know, slapstick comedy going on. And it's, it's a weird one. What do you think, Kenneth?
I still didn't get a pure like or dislike out of you, but I understand why. I like it. I like it a lot. Despite the nihilistic aura of Patrick Yau's subsequent credited works,
yep,
The Odd One Dies doesn't come with that. It's actually more uplifting than his other movies.
You might think that it is, but it's not.
Well,
another surprise to me.
Well, I think it ultimately is, without spoiling anything, I think it ultimately is uplifting, especially compared to his other dark.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think it's, you think that it may go somewhere else, it might be dark, but it does turn out to be kind of quite, you know, comforting and quite nice in the end.
Yeah, and looking at the movie, Wai Kar-fai might as well helm this one too, you know, because he wrote the script, Wai Kar-fai, and he's a wild director, as we know, in too many ways to be number one. So I wouldn't be surprised if Wai Kar-fai directed some of this, but regardless, it's the credited parties that should be acknowledged in the absence of the 100% truth, and the credited party for me have churned out this roller coaster like mysterious gem. I love this movie actually quite a bit, and I can't get enough of, you alluded to it, but the slapstick. But
yeah,
it's not slapstick that you can easily describe, because it's droll, low-key, quirky humor, which I've seen in multiple Milky Way movies from Johnny Toe. And I think it's something he very much likes, and it's something I connect to Milky Way movies. So how are you with that kind of... Let's just take an example, okay? Let's just think of an example. Yeah, you know, the opening scene, you know, when he, after he's been beaten up, after turning over the mahjong table in being all irrational, the mostly mute Triad Mo, then he comes in again.
Yeah.
And the kind of goofy music plays, you know. I don't know if that's the best example, but regardless, what do you think of, let's say, the quirky humor in this one, but the Johnny Toe's quirky humor in general, if you know what I'm talking about when I'm talking about.
No, I do understand what you mean, Ken. I've heard, I think we've seen kind of a few comments here and there about this film from, you know, on the pages and stuff about, on our Facebook page and stuff, kind of some of the guys listening to the show, thinking that it probably works better on kind of second or third views, that it probably holds up on a bit more views. And I can see that, because at first, the comedy's kind of, it's left field, and you can't quite make heads or tails about what's going on and the vibe of the film, but yeah, after a bit, it does suck you in, and the comedy itself, it's never, I think it's over the top, but it's almost, the rest of the film is so absurd. I mean, a lot of the setups and situations in the film feel kind of blackly comic.
Yes.
You know, they're playing out as these kind of absurd scenes, which are juxtaposed, as you said, with strange, almost goofy, like soft jazz soundtrack.
Yeah, cha-cha-cha, you know.
I always felt like he was going to break out into a cha-cha-cha any minute. And they're kind of violent and hard-boiled to the extreme, rendering them so over the top it becomes funny in a way.
Yeah, I think you're thinking maybe the repeated gag of the finger chopping.
There's one that gag's well, and a lot of the gambling scenes, it's so hard boiled and it's so kind of, you know, hard and kind of, you know, it's almost to the point where it becomes surreal.
Yes.
It almost becomes kind of cartoonish, and I think from that is where most of the comedy is generated. And with Toby's films in general, I always feel like it's always balanced. Again, it's never kind of, it's not like you have a Stephen Chow moment and then you've got kind of toe drama and toe action.
No.
Stephen Chow moment. It's always, you know, Toby's got his own brand of comedy, which is very kind of downplayed. It's sometimes a bit kind of quirky and a bit kind of silly, and you don't know how he got there with certain scenes, but it does fit because it's a different brand of comedy altogether. It's not particularly very slapsticky. It fits within the kind of, you know, the tapestry of the film.
You have to see it, I guess, to understand what quirky means, because I always think it's too simplified to say that. But, you know, take, let's mention a firm example, like an opening a triad boss wants to cut off Takashi Kaneshiro's finger, and he on two occasions or three manages to turn the situation around by chopping off the triad boss's finger itself, and then you have his henchmen scrambling to look for ice. And then you got that da 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 cha 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 music in the background. And I love when triad henchmen are goofy, you know. and that in itself is gold for me. Toe's got the pulse on and the finger on this type of humor for my sensibilities, because I'm not sure how this must play out wildly different with different viewers. I think it's a love or hate thing, because some people might just shrug their shoulders. What's funny about that? I actually think it's drop-dead hilarious what we get here. And yet, as we discuss a little bit later in the review, for me, it still manages to coexist with an uplifting spirit, because it's a mysterious free-for-all movie that shouldn't work, but for me personally, it does. But I think it's borderlining overall the movie on a love it or hate it film, because it might just be too confusing for some people, thinking those two elements don't belong together, like the quirky and uplifting aura. For me, it does.
I agree. I mean, I think, you know, Takashi Kaneshiro's character himself is kind of an extension of that. This indestructible, nothing to lose kind of slacker whose character traits and demeanor are so overblown, it actually pushes him past stereotypical into something else entirely.
You don't know if he's an actual mentally challenged adult, because he doesn't say anything most of the time. He isn't as, let's say, immersed in the trial world, because it seems like he's a child in it. You know, for instance, he finds the old cell phone, at a garbage dump, and then he starts posing with it, you know. Like, I can be a triad, but he doesn't say anything. He seems like he's the Forrest Gump of the triad world, really. But he has a high threshold for pain as well, because he's beaten up left and right, and it doesn't really seem to affect him.
Yeah, it's like two kind of, you know, comical extremes.
Yes.
And the fact that he's kind of so tough and so hard is almost, you know, it's past, you know, stereotypical, it's past that. It's into some kind of other alien territory where he's not of this world. His character seems...
no one really behaves realistically in this movie. Point. You know, it's a movie universe where behavior patterns are akin to silences for cool, quirky effect.
Yeah.
You know, stopping, like, the universe entirely just for the effect. Yep. You know, so there's no ounce of realism here, yet we still got an uplifting kind of personal drama aura surrounding the movie. I know it doesn't make sense when I speak of it, but believe me, for me, it did.
Yeah, it's got some very kind of obtuse and surreal moments, such as the early scenes with the so-called, you know, gun dealer, as we know him from when he's first introduced, who becomes slightly more important later, and the scenes with the hotel manager, which was funny, and in some respects are touching almost, a head scratchers into what part they play in the film.
Yes.
But I think overall, this is how the film works. It's a threadbare plot. The plot doesn't really matter. It's just a lot of tangents into physical comedy, back with surreal character moments, which move the film more than any actual story could.
Yes.
This type of movie making.
You know what, Tom? I gotta credit you. That's a wonderful way to describe the movie. You really hit the nail on the head there, actually. Because it's so hard to actually make people understand why it can be wild and still matter.
It's a good movie. It's just not a familiar good movie. It doesn't work as a good movie should, but it's still a good movie.
Yeah.
It doesn't hit all those kind of key points that a good movie should, like, you know, good plots, good characters. We do get decent character development, but in terms of plot, there's not a lot there. But it's mostly these quirky moments, which kind of it leaps from, you know, one kind of quirky moment to one kind of black humor moment, and it's really the film's pulse and survival is on these scenes. Mm-hmm. And they all hit. There's never a scene where it tries to do something and kind of fails. They all hit at what they're trying to do, whether it be kind of with a humorous moment or whether it be with a character moment. But it's so kind of odd in the way that it works. I can see it putting some people off, but I think once you get past the fact that it's going to be, you completely take out your head that it's going to be kind of a tightly plotted film, you know, gangster film, I think if you put it on its own merits and go in with nothing at all, I think you would enjoy it. You need just it's almost like you need to kind of forget the way you normally watch films and enjoy film, and enjoy it on a completely different kind of plane. Like, it's a completely different way of thinking and a completely different way of making films, and you enjoy it on a almost sketch-like way and almost.
Mm.
Yeah, it's. I mean, the film does get more straightforward post the hour mark. Mm-hmm. It feels more like familiar territory, but for the first hour, it's something completely different. It might disappoint people, just some who wanted it to keep the oddball feel for the rest of the film. But I think it works. I think you get the oddball, the oddball nature of the film, and then it kind of goes into more familiar territory. But the familiar territory
was still unexpected, to be honest, because I didn't expect the movie to be to start where it did and end where it did, without spoiling it.
And you get, obviously, it's heartfelt as well, so that works as well. You don't get a cop-out ending where it's kind of stereotypical. It's familiar, but it works because it's almost... Yeah, but for some strange reason, you feel like you know these characters more because of what, you know, these strange situations they've been in, more than giving them, you know, the director's giving you any kind of backstory on them. You feel like you know them more because you've seen them in these strange situations and how they behave. I think the scene where they first get to the hotel and they're kind of, you know, washing, and the scene where, it's Kiskisio's character that takes off his shoes and he cleans his feet, and he can still smell his feet and he realizes it's his shoes. And there's a scene where he kind of hides the shoes, not wanting to, you know, make a bad impression. And you see, Connelly's character does exactly the same thing. She hides her feet in the bed.
Yes.
So it's like these little kind of character moments that really give you no kind of backstories, characters, or where they're from. We do get that eventually, but initially all we get is kind of these little tiny kind of character moments about things, certain actions they do,
mm-hmm.
and from these, they do bond you with the characters strangely.
Yeah.
Even though we know nothing about them and where they're from, and they're pretty much kind of very kind of plain Jane characters. You know, they're not. There's nothing special about them apart from the fact they're very stoic and very kind of emotionless. But other than that, there's not really any backstory to them, but somehow you bond with them because of these absurd situations they've been through.
Yeah, I actually, you echo my sentiments perfectly, but I couldn't even come close to 10% to expressing it like you just did. So there's no need for me to repeat certain things because you are spot on. You know, I can just fill in the listeners a little bit that they start to bond in this. You don't really know where this bond goes between Takeshi Kaneshiro and Carmen Lee's character. You know the bond based on the plot synopsis, but the whole hotel setup is actually he wants her to spend a night at a hotel and get cleaned up because she looks nasty, man. She hasn't showered in like a year or. And her eyes are, you know, black around. She's got black around her eyes, you know. And initially they can't stay at the, you know, whatever hotel it is. I mean, it's a 4-5 star hotel, obviously. And I love those little moments where they go in initially, and he says the hotel manager, you know, very courteously, we don't let locals stay here. So it's only for international customers, so to say. And he just punches him in the face. And I love those. Like, it hurt. It looks like it hurts.
It did look like it hurt, man.
And it leads to that. And it leads to, you know, them later staying at the hotel and it kind of being sweet. And all those moments where he prepares the bath for her, even scrubs the bathtub just in case, you know. It does sweet, like, delightful non-verbal moments I dig as well, and there's certainly a darker backstory to her and a little bit of emotional backstory to her, so we know what's going on, yet it's still not conventional at all, you know. And in between we get weird and wacky humor, and I want to single out one because I laughed till my heart exploded. This just worked for me. The gun dealer, the kind of either ill or completely drunk gun dealer. I mean, he looked like he was sick, literally. You know, not like he was a drunk. He looked so sick, and he goes to him initially to get a gun, to rent a gun, and he's like, yeah, and then he brings him like an air conditioner, and where's the remote? Here, and Takeshi Kaneshiro, who's not said anything at this point, you know, I don't think he says anything in this scene either. You know, maybe he says like, no, gun. Oh, yeah, gun. And then later on, they go to a strip club and he sits there and like gives the stripper money. I think he looks so out of it, the gun rent guy. And Takeshi Kaneshiro has to tap him, you know, gun. Oh, how about a fake gun?
It's just so strange. It's funny, but it's just almost so strange and unnecessary. And it's,
I know, but
you're thinking, what's going on? You're thinking, you know, what's going on? Is he putting himself into a trap? Is he trying to, you know, get into something else?
No, but he's at just the end out of it.
It's purely just for comical purposes.
I know.
And you have to kind of look at the film as that's what it is. The film does things just for comedy, and that's kind of how, you know, how it kind of goes from scene to scene. And, it is a funny film. There's definitely moments of really kind of inspired comedy without being kind of too silly or too over the top. There are moments of really kind of inspired comedy throughout, and it's
in a normal movie, by the way, the end of that scene, if he would have said like, how about a fake gun, the other characters would have just strangled him on the spot, you know, a la Bart Simpson and you know, Homer Bart Simpson. But it doesn't go, and yet it's so funny that we've been taking on this 5-6-7 minute sequence and he doesn't even have real guns. how about a fake gun? And he didn't even end with, you know, wah, wah, wah. You know, not even that, you know.
In the 70s, it would have ended with
that. So it's a tired triad world. It's a goofy triad world, and I love when the triad world is goofy, but it's a tired world. And And I dig it. It is my second viewing, but it's been years since I've seen it, so it was kind of new as well. And I love that it's this mysterious, somewhat free-for-all thing that Milky Way opted to do, because it's not commercial. They felt like, I don't know, let's just do it, even if it's not financially wise to do it. It's a low-budget film, but it's still not a commercial film at all, you know.
It's one of those rare films that you're watching it. It's got no, it's zero commercial value whatsoever. I mean, you see the poster itself. I mean, there's nothing about the poster that really leaps out at you and makes you go, "Oh yeah, I want to see that film."
Maybe if it had Andy Lau, but
yeah, that's what I mean. There's no, you know, in terms of stars, they're not even looking at. You can't even see their faces fully, and it's. You know, it's a very kind of, it's downbeat, it's, you know, it's, is there art house kind of notions to it? Yeah, that there are, it does feel at some points very kind of art house, and I think, you know, the comparisons to Wong Kar Wai could be made in terms of just the feeling of the way some of it's shot and the way kind of the characters interact with each other, but I think it's a completely different ball game.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot more going on, and a lot more kind of strange things going on than, you know, your typical art house kind of romance film.
Yeah, I agree.
It's a strange one. It's an odd one.
I do fairly recommend it myself. But if you have the patience for it, do watch it twice. I think you'll the second time being ready for it, you can maybe make your determination better in that regard. I know it's not a very alluring prospect. Like, watch the movie twice, then you can make your judgment. You normally with movies, you should be able to do that after one viewing. But in this case, you know, 90 minutes, at 90 minutes, you can afford it. I hope you can afford it anyway.
Yeah, it's disjointed and it does work differently, but it will retain your interest.
Mm-hmm.
It's not, there's no kind of tight plot into it. There's no, again, it kind of breathes on its own strangeness. It's definitely an odd one. It's almost like kind of a Gen X or kind of a hipster take on the Hong Kong assassin romance genre.
Mm-hmm.
If you know what I mean, if that makes sense, I'd recommend it to someone wanting something a bit stranger, Hong Kong cinema. And it's a film that I think could only be made from this time in Hong Kong cinema from this company.
Yeah. I think it's odd, more odd than other quirky Johnny To movies. I mean, in comparison, The Mission, which is, you know, To's really, like, outstanding, to me anyway, outstanding quirky masterpiece, that The Odd One Dies is way stranger.
It's way stranger. It breathes on its strange. The strangeness is what kind of keeps it together and what makes the film what it is. While as The Mission has strangeness and has kind of strange quirky moments, but that's not all there is to it. With this, it kind of, the whole backbone of the film is strange black humor.
Yeah,
and it's an interesting watch.
Absolutely.
And a watch I'm very, you know, happy to have seen.
And I took some quotes from my review. I mean, it has some themes of, again, I won't spoil it, but if we're gonna talk a little bit about why it's uplifting, it has some themes about redemption and a kind of final mission in the triad world, you know, and trying to, you know, trying to find a world outside of this triad world. And if you, and that's an often used premise that in movies, you know, in gangster movies, I like the treatment here. I will keep it very vague. I like the treatment here because I was surprised by, you know, when I say uplifting, there is positivity here, but that's not spoiling the movie. It's just, it's a very different treatment of trying to find some kind of freedom and light in your life. These have fallen into the trial world for various fairly obscure reasons. They just have fallen into it, either out of lack of choice, really, there's nothing else, and or being dragged down via other characters. I think in her case, she's been more dragged down rather than a willing participant in the trial world, if you will, because she has a darker backstory, and
she's got a lot to her character than Takeshi's character.
Yeah,
which makes, you know, makes her involvement.
He's just in it to flip mahjong tables. Initially, yeah. It seems like it's an irrational mahjong table flipper.
He's just in it.
Who doesn't say anything?
He's in it just to throw punches at any random moment.
And yeah, he is scarred and all of that. He's not Superman, but it seems like he has a high threshold, and he doesn't enjoy it necessarily. But he's on his back quite quickly, you know.
Yeah.
Without using the Buddha's palm a la Kung Fu Hustle or anything. It's not like he can heal himself that way.
He first chop fingers off.
Yes. And I love the musical beat whenever that repeated gag of the finger chopping happens, you know. I actually love when Cheng Siu-Kung's camera gets really intense, you know, the regular DOP that Milky Way utilized. I love that stuff. So it's a classic example of... for me, of a suitable wait for 90 minutes, directed by and produced by sharp minds of the Hong Kong movie industry that weren't thinking along the same lines of anyone else. They were for, you know, experimenting on their own. And for me, this is a successful experiment. One that they didn't necessarily deem like, okay, let's make this a trend. Not really. The humor was there, but the vehicles were very different, directed by Toe or not. I mean, you got... directors like Derek Chu, we're going to cover a movie called Comeuppance, which is a very dark black comedy. It's a black comedy too, and has very odd characters. So influenced by Johnny Toe, but it's very much Derek Chu as well, based on his track record, especially after the Milky Way stuff. So we'll get to that. I thought of that today, Comeuppance, which a movie I love. But I thought of that, I remember that was a Milky Way movie. I think it's a 98 and 99 movie too, so we'll get to that. Some minor notes before I finish my notes anyway. We used the Milky Way image logo, but for this one, and maybe for the only time, they used a different Milky Way image logo, more conventional logo rather than the simple, you know, the shape coming into frame and...
Yeah,
it was not that. It looked more like the China Star logo that you see sometimes, or the Wins logo that you see sometimes on movies. So they tried that. It looked way too commercial for them. So they scrapped that pretty quickly. And we still got, as far as I know, the old classic logo on movies. But I haven't seen the very, very latest ones, like Life Without the Principle. So maybe they changed it. But they kept it for a long time.
Is Motorway the newest one?
Motorway or I think that's the latest one. Yep.
I haven't seen it either.
It's one of the latest acclaimed ones that Soi Chang directed for Milky Way.
It's probably a CGI explosion and then Milky Way in the middle of that explosion
and someone running away from the explosion
and then Milky Way bars raining down on people,
yeah, because they licensed that shit, obviously. some very minor notes. I like the character of the Indian character that sets up like Takeshi Kaneshiro with the gun renter. I love a little thing that he has. He talks about both the assassination and the bootleg CD business in the same breath, almost. Yeah. So it's like he can multitask really well. Like, we're gonna kill this guy. Want to buy CDs? Kill this guy, CDs. So I like that. It's it was good fun. And again, the repetition of the getting out of knife jams is a wonderful piece of comedy in the movie. And I attribute a lot of this. I think when we watch Too Many Ways to Be Number One, I think we can put ourselves in a mindset that Wai Kar-fai has his pulse on the quirky as well. I think they make a good team, Johnny Toe. And this was solely written by Wai Kar-fai. I think he has his fingerprints are all over this as well. Mm-mm. It's the team, the Milky Way team in a way, but still they kept it at one director, so to say. Not even like, some vague assistant directing credits before the main directing credit. There's no such thing. It's just Patrick Yau.
It's Toe, but I think it's almost like Milky Way, you could say, directed by, you know, Milky Way, and I think that the kind of company itself, the name of that is as powerful as to say directed by Johnny Toe, because I think, you know, especially with his earlier efforts, it's a lot more a collaborative project and a lot more of, you know, who did direct this and how much of a hand did they have in it. Mm. So I think for this period, definitely, I think just saying that it was, you know, Milky Way itself is more than enough to kind of make it interesting.
Absolutely. So this was anyway available on Maya DVD. They never did a remastered DVD of it, so I don't know how easy it is to find online or in shops in Hong Kong. But if you can find it, it's still a good looking DVD in my opinion. They're a good print, optional subtitles. So if you can find it, don't like wait for Maya to continue to release remastered versions of their movies. They stopped that a number of years ago.
It's not in HD. I'm not watching that.
Well, you already did, so...
Ken
strikes again with his devious...
trap again.
Devious plan worked again, yes. So next time...
Yes.
Tom, Too Many Ways to Be Number One is in HD.
Is it? Okay.
Yes.
The retard comes out again.
Yeah. Right, and as I said, that'll be our next coverage. Not that we go exactly in the super exact order, but I want to do Too Many Ways to Be Number One next because I like the theme of non-director Johnny Toe movies, and this is a Wai Kar-fai directed movie, and it's crazy as hell. If you were to be lazy about it, you could say it's Hong Kong's Run Lola Run, but I think as a matter of fact, it came out before.
I think it did.
Yes, I think Run Lola Run was like a year after, so...
Because
it deals with two different versions centered around sort of a same event, you know, so we get two different versions of what might have happened. And hilarity ensues. It's a hilarious movie, and it's loved for many reasons, and it's an odd one, too, if you really want to look at it, but... it's a favorite for good reason, you know. Even in the Wai Kar-fai Q&A at the New York Asian Film Festival like 2 years ago, they say when he was there with his movie written by, they had a Q&A, and they Grady Hendrix, who interviewed him on stage, talked about various movies from the past, and when Too Many Ways to Be Number One was mentioned, you know, 3, 4, 5 people, you know, clapped instantaneously. So I mean, it doesn't sound like a loved movie, but you know what, it is, you know, it's a...
But that group of people who would be there...
Absolutely.
That's proof enough.
I think Jared was at the Q&A as well, so...
Yeah, he was.
So, it's not he who shot that, but he was at that Q&A for Written By. So, it was such a good... It was great, because you could also see, like, Wai Kar-fai light up, you know. And, wow, thank you.
Good, man.
Because they live inside their bubble, you know, they don't... assume that certain of their movies have huge popularity. So I think that that's what was great for them when they go outside of their bubble and get that perspective that we have. That they
find that a lot with Hong Kong directors is the kind of they're in the bubble and you know, very kind of, you know, when they do find out about this international fans, it's very surprising, which is good, which is nice. You don't get a lot of big head directors in Hong Kong.
You'd seen Too Many Ways to Be Number One before, yeah.
Yeah, mate, I have, yeah.
Okay. It's been a while? Some years?
It's been a while, yeah. I'll be looking forward to maybe a year, 2 years. I'm looking forward to revisiting it a lot. I think it's, at the time, it was my favourite from this period and the kind of the course this show has taken. So hopefully it'll kind of still stand up, or, you know, maybe possibly not. We'll see. Looking forward to revisiting it, though.
Cool. So that's next on Milky Way Treasures. We'll see if it's the next Podcast on Fire, but we'll it's the intent anyway, so we'll see what happens there. So if you don't have any other notes you want to squeeze in about the Odd One Die, should we lay this to rest and deem it a treasure, I guess?
I think I should just say that the Odd One lives.
Oh, you've sat on that all week, man.
Yeah.
You know what I'm going to do in the editing? I'm going to insert cricket sounds. That's why I'm Hitler and you're not. I'm probably too lazy to find cricket sounds on the internet anyways. but for comedic effect, it kind of...
Yeah, cheers.
And I would would insert huge applause after everything I say.
Of course.
Which I usually do. If you listen back to the shows, I usually do that. You know. Yes, yeah. My name is Ken. And there's Tom.
Just That's all there is to say. Yeah.
That's why I like editing, to make myself look better. Because
that's why I need to start editing.
I have nothing to do with low self-esteem at all. Nothing to do. Not small penis syndrome at all. Not at all. Not at all. Anyway, good times, Tom. I gotta credit you. You summed it up, this movie, extremely well. That's why I never even went over some of my notes, because you were just spot on. You could summarize this movie incredibly well, despite this being an odd movie, because it is a challenge to go over this movie and put out some concrete thoughts about it. So, you know, well fucking done, man. I'm impressed. And I always am, but I was, in the case of this one, because it is an odd one, I was doubly impressed. So,
cheers, man. It's an odd film to talk about, but I think I do recommend people see it and come up with their own thoughts to it, because it is a film that works on a few levels, and has a few different kind of things mixed in, but I think it works on a completely different playing field than most films do, and most films, you know, of this period and of this genres do.
Alrighty. That's the final nail for Odd One Dies for this podcast. Hopefully other podcasts can do it as well, you know. Do it, you know. Let's build the Odd One Dies, an empire of the Odd One Dies podcasts. Anyway, let's mull over that while I go over the contact information again. podcastonfire.com is where you find this show, Podcast on Fire, and the other shows on the Podcast on Fire network. Email for feedback, podcastonfire@googlemail.com. The old forum, podcastonfire.com/forum. The old members only archive is there, but the new bonus episodes, if you will, is on the website, exclusive to the website, not extra podcasts that are on iTunes or on Stitcher. So go to podcastonfire.com for the bonus episode section. Join us on Facebook, facebook.com/POF network is our page. And join the discussion in the Podcast on Fire network discussion group. Type in Podcast on Fire network into Facebook search bar, or follow the link on the page, facebook.com/POF network. And follow us on Twitter as well, twitter.com/podcastonfire. SoGoodReviews.com, I have a review up for the Old One Dice that I did a few years ago. That was a pleasure to reread because my views matched up 100%. You know, sometimes when you read reviews a few years ago, you realize that you are changed. You know, but in this case, it pretty much matched up exactly to what I thought today. So that was kind of neat to read an old review in that regard. SleazyGayVideo.com is where you find the bite-sized video reviews that I do, and follow me on Twitter to see what I do. twitter.com/SoGoodReviews. Subscribe to the Podcast on Fire network on iTunes and leave us a rating and comment if you like the show. We would very much appreciate that. And stream us on Stitcher if you don't like downloading podcasts to your device. stitcher.com for the application available to your computer, and go to your nearest app store to download a free application for your smartphone or tablet. And once you're in Stitcher, Podcast on Fire network is what you'll type in the search bar. You can add each show individually. And check out Tom KW's reviews on VCinemaShow.com. We have a link to his review archive on VCinemaShow.com, so check it out and follow him regularly to see any updates in the future.
Yep.
So that's us. So cheers, Tom, for being on. Cheers for doing a great job as always. And my name is Kenny B, and I've been your host. And with me was Tom KW. So say bye, buddy.
Go, boy, folks.
Crickets.